everybody. Would you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Again, welcome everybody. Nice to see a great turnout tonight. Next on the agenda is roll call, and Councilmember Bain said he would not be here tonight. And Councilmember Charles Garcia called in and wasn't sure if he was going to make it, so at the moment he's not here also. So do I hear a motion to excuse Eugene Bain, Councilmember?
Make that motion.
Mark first and second. Any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, do I hear a motion to excuse Councilmember Charles Garcia?
I'll make that motion.
First and Taylor second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, then that passes. Next on our agenda is citizen input. And if you would like to address the council, please raise your hand. We'll give you up to 5 minutes when you come to the mic. Give us your name and address. And we have some people that called in. Calvin D. Rigoberto R. and Braden S. to speak to the council about Skateboard Park. So I'm not sure who wants to go first. When you come up, give us your name and address. And you have up to 5 minutes.
Hi, I'm Rigo. The other person who was supposed to talk couldn't make it today. Be sorry. I live on 331 East Cedar Street, apartment number 8. And I came to the council because Dan, that he saw us skating one day and he talked to us about coming into the council and addressing what we would like in a skate park where we could tell you guys a good place to put the skate park. And a couple of places that we came up with were that there's this lot across Leprechaun that it's right next to the Aflac place, and it's just empty. And we thought it would be a good place to put a skate park there, and because it's right on Main Street, and also the Leprechaun's right in front of it. So also if kids got tired or hungry, they can just go across and buy food.
There you go.
Also, another good place we thought was there's Walmart, and then there's this gas station next to Walmart. And there's this empty lot before the Taco Bell stuff right there. It's one empty space. And I thought that'd be a good place. And finally, this other place. Location was next Burger King. They have this huge landscape in the back next to the highway that leads up to that bridge. That's all empty. We know it's next to the houses, but if that would also be a possible place to put it, we would suggest that. And also, if you guys would need a name for the skate park, we thought would be a good name to name it would be Bob Smith. You know, it's these two right here, their grandfather taught them how to skate. And they taught me and all my other friends. And if you know who he is, he was the one that fell at the Hiawatha egg drop. And I thought it would be really nice to put the skate park in his name for him.
Right.
And that's awesome. All I would like to address to the council.
Okay. Well, thank you. Those are great ideas. Thank you for coming. Anybody else want to share? Name and address when you step up.
I'm Braden Smith, and my address is 640 South 5th Avenue. And I think it would be a good idea to have a skate park because whenever we skateboard at, like, just places around town, a lot of the places we get kicked out because they say that they don't have insurance to cover us if we fall or anything. And so we really don't have a set place to skateboard. So, and we just had to find a bunch of different places to try to skateboard and learn and get better. And we just like to have a spot where everything's like where we can skate and we won't get kicked out and we won't get like yelled at or anything. You know?
Awesome.
All right.
What kind of things would you like to see in the skate park?
So we wouldn't like to see so much, like we would like to have a ramp maybe, like half pipe, but we wouldn't like to see a lot of that. We'd like to see more spots like that we would find in the streets, like where we just skate in places around town. Because like we straight we skate skate street. Yeah, we street skate. And there's street skating and vert skating. And vert skating is like where you just go out and find spots like stairs and rails and all that. And vert skating is like ramps, like where you skate ramps and everything. And we all know street skating, so it'd be better because that's what we already know. And like one ramp would be cool so we can get better on that, but we're more like stairs and rails and just street spots. If you could look what street spots are, look up.
Have any of you boys had an opportunity to use Moses Lake Skate Park?
Yeah.
Would you like something like on the lines of that?
Or
some of the things that are in that?
That's kind of more vert, but that's like good. I mean, we could take what we'll get, but just we think it would be better because that's more vert than street. There aren't many, very, very many street components in there, and we'd like more street in there. Yeah, like street obstacles and all that. Like we would find just riding around town, riding down the street and all that. So that's what we already know.
Interesting. I haven't thought about being street.
Yeah.
You hear about the big pipes and all these things up in the air.
Yeah.
So you're not quite interested in that type of...
Like, it'd be cool to learn that, just to expand on skating, but I think street skating's more fun. Like, when I go to skate parks, I don't have as much fun. The ramps, because I don't really know much, and they just, you know, I just don't really know what to do on them. So learning it would be fun, like, have a couple ramps there, but more street components, because that's what I know, and that's what I like to do. That's what I have more fun on.
You know, it was 5-6 years ago when a group of young gentlemen come in and talk to us about a skate park. And they inspired us, the council, to start saving for it. And we've saved over $200,000 for it. But it's going to be a group of you boys that help put this park together to let us know what you need in it, what will be used all the time.
Well, another thing that would be good is to have we would enjoy concrete the most rather than wooden or steel metal ramps, because the wooden ramps, like in Colville, they have a skate park that was made out of wood and it was just all taken apart and like the wood was all corroded and stuff and it was just all taken apart and you couldn't even like skateboard on it. And like metal ramps, those can get taken apart, but I don't know, just concrete would be the best because that's like, it can't really be moved and taken anywhere.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other gentlemen that I can share? Of you, so when hopefully if we get some property one day or whatever happens, you may get a call from us and be part of the committee that helps decide how it's going to be designed and built. Would you be interested in doing that?
Yes.
Good, that's what we want.
Mr. Mayor, could I speak to that for a minute? I ran into these young gentlemen at McDonald's, and so I accosted them as they came out of there. Said I wanted to know something from them about skateboarding. And in our discussion, they mentioned that they are aware of Mr. Moses down here and gave the city a plan. And one of the things they said was, it's got a half pipe in it, and we really don't need one of those. We just want some stuff that we can use for street things. And I said, well, how about kind of like Moses Lake? And they said, well, yeah, it's kind of close to what they have. So I asked them to come here for two reasons. First, support for the skateboard park, which I've been interested in for 6 years. And secondly, I wanted them to see kind of how the city government works. And we got to involve these young people, and I really appreciate the fact that they took their time to come here and speak to us about what they are really interested in, what they'd like to see for the city. And they've gone out and looked for some places to do this. So I congratulate you guys for coming here, and thank you very much for your input.
Yes, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it.
You can stay. You don't have to leave.
citizen input. Okay, then I'll close citizen input. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
I'll make that motion.
Jean at first.
I'll second it.
And Taylor second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda approval?
Make that motion.
Mark Snyder first.
Second.
Dan Johnson second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. Thank you again for coming, you young men. That was great. Okay, 4.1, Adams County Pet Rescue Presentation. Jane Kruger.
My name's Jamie Kruger. I am the shelter director, and we're here tonight just to kind of tell you about what Pet Rescue's been doing in the last 6 months, some of our numbers. And so I have brought forth city numbers and county numbers because we combined them all for the big picture. So what I have here is just a shelter report, and you can see it tells you by month how many city dogs, how many county dogs, and how many owner claimed dogs. There's a summary down at the bottom that says that to the end of July, we took in 134 city dogs, 165 county dogs, and 64 dogs were returned to their owners. So that's pretty cool. Also on the chart, this year we've been doing something very different. We are transferring a lot of our dogs. The reason we're doing that is because then we can serve our community better by taking in dogs and finding them homes. We are partnering with many different shelters. PAWS is located in Linwood. NOAA is in Marysville. Grant County's in Moses Lake. The 11th Hour Rescue is in North Bend, Issaquah. And we've also worked with Sunny Skies from Puyallup and the Seattle Humane Society. So down there at the bottom, you can see the different places that we've transferred to. And we've also adopted out 55 dogs. So you can see our numbers are kind of different. We're not focusing so much on adoptions. We're focusing on rehoming our dogs. And so I would like to invite Mickey Keeson, she is the president of Adams County Pet Rescue, to come up and to explain to you, where are these dogs coming from? Why are there so many?
I'm Mickey Keeson. I'm president of Adams County Pet Rescue. I live in Ralston, and I've been a member of Pet Rescue and involved for probably 15 to 20 years. In the last couple of years, I decided it was I had some time, and I'd step up to the plate, and we'd be a little bit more involved on a local level here in Othello. Part of what I do, and part of what is easy for me to do, not easy, but I'm able to do that, is I do a lot of grant writing. So when you write grants, you have to be able to state your purpose, state why, state what's going on. And in my journey of finding different grants, I discovered that PetSmart, along with the American Medical Veterinaries Association, have a pet calculator. And they've actually come up with a formula that they can estimate how many dogs and cats live in an area that has a documented population, and they, from that, they've also been able to establish how many averaging free roaming cats there would be by that population. For example, I took the zip code of this area, 99344, there's 16,810 people, Othello has 7,400, and there's a rural 9410. And from that, then they're able to say, you divide that by five, you got to average of cats, you got, and then it goes down into their main emphasis is spay-neuter. And what they've discovered is 90% of the people who live above the poverty line, and the poverty line is $11,400 per person, 90% of those people that own pets generally tend to spay and neuter. 90% of the people living below the poverty line do not spay and neuter. And it makes sense to me. If I live on an average of $11,400, what am I going to do? Feed the kids, spay the cat. I'm going to feed the kids. I mean, that's just what it is. So the poverty level has a huge effect on the number of unaltered dogs and cats. So what I then went into, and I discovered that Othello's poverty level, the city, and this is according to the Census Bureau of 2011, is 30%, 31%, and that equals 2,000 people. The rural is 33%. That is about 2,100 people. And there's X amount above. So then after that, then I'll just go quickly through this. You can divide that out to get the number of cats. You can get that out. Total of about 2,100 cats. Free roaming cats are estimated 493. Dogs are going to be 1,800. They're estimating, because of the poverty level, that there's going to be about 650 dogs within the city limits that are not spayed or neutered, and there's going to be about 1,200 cats that are not spayed or neutered. And keep in mind, this is a documented population. As we know, in the Othello and the zip code, we have a migrant population that comes in. It's about 4,500 additional folks per year, as per the Migrant Council. And at Pet Rescue, we've noticed that they come and go, and we can see an influx of 20 to 30% starving and abandoned dogs in November when there's a big exit. We also see a large number of purebred large dogs. We see more during that time. Those are anecdotal. I don't have statistics that document that. But anecdotally, we see that. So we know that that migrant population coming in and out has an influx and has an effect on who we see. The rural population has a similar kind of thing to look at. But it's in the city, so we'll just look at that. So, okay, fine. Well, that's fine. We know how many cats and dogs are estimated on the population. Compared to the rest of the state. Well, compared to the rest of the state, the cats in Othello are probably 30% more, and probably about 50%, 100% more. Twice as many dogs are not fixed, and 1,200 as opposed to the estimated 900. And in the county, it pretty much follows the same deal. So, when you looked at Jamie's numbers prior to this. Transferred or rehomed as many dogs as we did all last year. Now, those dogs were always out there. It's just that we're able to transfer and rehome faster. But it makes me and the rest of us really, really aware of the need. It's a huge need. And we look at these numbers that I just projected out there, and we all know that those are probably low, because we know that there's a fairly large undocumented population, and that adds to that dilemma. Also, the people that are below the 30 or the poverty line, they have a very different relationship with their dogs. It's very casual. And it's much different than mine and probably a lot of yours in here. It's very casual. The dogs don't come in at night necessarily. There's not a lot of fences, maybe fences or may not. Somebody comes and says, is that your dog? Not my dog. But it's a very casual relationship that they have with their animals as opposed to some of us. So it changes those dynamics and increases the need tremendously. We are enjoying this year a really good relationship with your new animal control officer, Heather Miller. Officer Miller is excellent, and she is a large part of why those numbers are coming in that have been more, and you'll see they're higher than they have been in the years past because she's out there bringing them in. Sometimes she's bringing Alani. So, but she's doing an excellent job. You guys need to know that your animal control officer is spot on. So to help us, as you know, our journey that we've talked about before, you all know about how the shelter burnt and you've allowed us to stay on your ground. And we have a contract with you and we've been working with that. But you also know that we're trying and we're working very hard at building a new facility. Now, Ernie Summers is our project director on that, and he knows all the ins and outs. He probably eats, drinks, and sleeps them. But we wanted to take this opportunity, if there's any questions about how we function, what we're doing, where we're at in our building, anything that we can answer, if you have time, we're more than happy to answer a couple of questions.
Well, we're heading towards our budget process, so we'd be coming back with an increased budget?
We haven't anticipated that this time.
Do you want to consider that because we are heading in that direction?
Yes, we do.
Towards the end of September, we'll be starting to talk about that. So.
Okay. And so if we were to entertain that, what's the process to do that?
Wait.
I think the contract says we need to have any changes in by November 1.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. It'd be nice if you knew by the third week of September what you think you might be asking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If possible.
Okay.
That'd be nice.
Any questions from anybody about the facility or anything else that we do?
Oh, I just have a quick question on the, you're transferring a lot to PAWS and NOAA and to mm-hmm. the other agencies. Is it costing you anything to do that?
No. Okay. I mean, it costs us mileage. It costs us our food and this time, you know, we have to keep them until that goes.
Yeah.
We average every 3 weeks, and Jamie may have a different insight on that. Do you have any, can you speak to that, Jamie? They don't reimburse us anything either. I mean, they're happy to take them, but they don't want to reimburse any expenses coming their way. So
when do you think you'll be finished with your construction work?
Well, as soon as we get a few more dollars in the bank. What we've done is we've decided to take that big step forward and commit the dollars that we do have. So the structure you see, the cement pad, the well, the frame, the windows, the doors, all that outside look, it's all sealed up. Inside is some framed rooms. That's it. Until we're able to regroup, continue on, get more monies, and go forward. And when we do that, Ernie asked me to invite any of you that would like a personal tour of the new facility. Please contact him. He's more than happy to do that. And I'm sure that you all know that we are hoping and planning that we are making space for the city. There is a designated area. So we will, when we have that ability, and to speak to that, we will be coming. Any other questions?
So when the building is finished to where you're going right now, are you still using a property down over the hill?
No.
No. You're going to move everything up to it?
You betcha. Everything.
Any other questions? What you do for the city. You know, I know you do a great job. I know some of your volunteers personally, and mm-hmm. I know they work hard. So they've told me about what they do down there and things like that, and I think, wow, that's dedication.
And we truly appreciate where we're at. We do have a challenge. We, as you know, we don't have a lot of dogs, but we do have a fair number of dogs that are stolen. And we are looking at ways to boost up the security, and a fence along the top part of that somehow would be much appreciated. If we could entertain the thought of letting us kind of rummage through your pile in the back city lot and bring some of those panels forward and design something there, we would truly appreciate some consideration on that. As you know, anybody that's been down there, it's an open book. I mean, you can walk right through. We have no way to secure any of those animals or secure anybody from walking back to those pens. Yes, the pens are locked, but we've actually have people crawling up over the pens into the pen and handing over, or somehow we just have to speculate how it's done. So that's what they do.
Yeah.
So that is something, I guess, that we would ask for at this point.
So the kennel down there, and forgive me because I can't remember, it has fencing on several sides?
There's three sides that are fenced.
Three sides. It's
three
just
sides.
The front side that's open.
It's the front side as you come down the hill and you approach it. That's the side that we would like to, if possible, be able to secure that. So that, a couple of things. Dog gets out, it happens. There's that extra barrier. People coming in, it's an extra barrier.
So
they don't have free access to those back pens.
So we would need fencing and slash a gate on the front half.
And there is odds and ends down there. Yeah, and we do have a crew that comes in that helps us from the minimum security that would help erect that. And there are odds and ends of panels down there. I mean, we're not looking for a fancy dancy. We just, because we know we're not, we don't want to be there any longer than anybody else. But for during that time period, it would be nice to have that added security there. So if they take that into consideration, I'd be much appreciated. Any other questions?
Sitting here, so they heard what you said too, and we shall see if there's something we can help you with. So we'll see if it can help you with something. We'll
that would be great. It would be much appreciated.
Thank you. Anybody else from your group? That's everybody?
I have my group here.
Yeah. Is that everybody then? Okay. Well, thank you. We appreciate you coming and we appreciate what you're doing. So, like I said, I have a couple friends that are involved and they tell me what they do, and I think, wow, that's dedication. That's pretty neat. So, okay, 4.2 presentation by Paul Stoker. Voila.
All right. I believe there's something in your packet. You have the council's packet. They didn't bring extras, so
yeah.
I hope it is. Groundwater management area, I've been here before. The current scenario is that I'm here to present to the council a proposal for future water resource alternatives. And this particular proposal is being suggested to be funded by the Office of Columbia River, Department of Ecology. A similar proposal has been provided to City of Moses Lake last year. We prepared a report on the 25 cities in this particular area about their water resource issues. And currently, the State Department of Health, the State Department of Ecology, and others are concerned about that process. We provided several options to the Office of Columbia River, and they selected Moses Lake and Othello as I would characterize it as pilot projects for determining how to assess a future direction for water resource sustainability, is the best way to put it. So what's happening here is you have a four-page proposal in front of you that is a scope of work that is expected to be sent to the Office of Columbia River. There is one also from the City of Moses Lake. They've already sent a letter of support to Ecology for their particular part of the scenario. The project is scoped for about 18 months and would tend to go down the road of feasibility and budgetary and other issues that are related to the options that you have available to the City of Othello. One of the most interesting parts of it would be that there'd be a significant amount of work spent on what's called ASR, aquifer storage and recovery. Aquifer storage and recovery is simply taking surface water, cleaning it to a certain potable standard, putting it underground into a basalt layer that is able to contain the water so the city can retrieve it back when they need it. This is a fairly widespread and popular process throughout Western United States, not so much in the state of Washington. There are some groundwater regulations that have provided some significant issues up till now. the state water rights regulations process is beginning to, what's the best word I can say? I want to say soften, but trying to accommodate the knowledge and technology that's been used throughout the Western United States. The state of Oregon has a substantial number of projects like this, and the state of Washington is supporting currently two or three of them in the state. And that's why they're substantially interested in pursuing the option for ASR here in Othello, as it seems to be a fairly likely candidate for future water resource sustainability. The project's about $250,000. Again, no cost to the city. It would be funded as basically as a pilot project for assessing future water resources by the Office of Columbia River. The expectation tonight would be to suggest to the City Council that we request that you provide a letter indicating your support of that particular project to the Office of Columbia River so it can proceed. That's in a nutshell. Now, I'm going to open up this. So I can go a long ways along this, but so I just opened up for questions about any that you might have regarding this particular study. It would not be restricted just to ASR, but all the other options that may be available. There are several options that aren't available here, that, for instance, that Moses Lake can deal with, but you do not have a reasonable shallow rechargeable groundwater source here within the city limits, so that's not a reasonable alternative. But there are other alternatives that will be considered besides ASR and provided to you at the end of this 18-month period with a blueprint, a document of costs and engineering possibilities that will provide you some direction for making decisions for your future water resources.
Questions from council?
Comment here. I'd like to add a little bit to what Paul's saying here. You know, we've been talking and worrying about our water problem. I think this is our solution. We can go out here and punch as many wells as we want to, but pretty soon you come to the point where you don't have any water anymore, so what good does it do to keep punching those wells? So if you've got a chance to recharge those wells so those will at least continue, and you can probably even add possibly more wells in that same area to cover, to take care of our water problem from now on out. One thing that I look at this project is that we're not starting from the ground level. In other words, if ourselves, the city of Othello, tried to start this project on our own and work our way up the ladder to get some results to go to the Bureau or wherever we go to get purchase or to receive this water recharge our aquifer, it would be a longer process. This way, I think we're starting in the middle. We're starting between the Health Department and the Department of Ecology. We've already got a reserve with Guama because they've done a lot of the legwork already. They do a lot of work that people don't even understand or know what they're doing. But if you go around and you look at some of these other things that other people are bringing out, where did they come from? Where did they get the results from? It comes right back from Guama. They don't say too much about it, but you go out and look at some of these things and where do they get all of their information? Right back here. And I think this is great that the state has said, hey, let's open this up to two pilot programs, us and Othello. We're going to get a lot of benefit out of it. So I think it's very worthwhile to us to support a letter to this effect, and that'll keep Guam in operation, and it'll also open up the door to our possibility of future water from now on out.
Do I hear a motion to authorize the mayor to prepare a letter of support to Derek Sanderson, director of the Office of Columbia River, OCR, for the Department of Ecology, for the 2013 to 2015 Columbia Basin Guama project for the City of Othello, aquifer storage and recovery feasibility assessment?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, thank you, Eric, first and second. Okay. Any other questions? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, and that passes. Paul, thank you very much. We appreciate what you're doing. We look forward to seeing what this says. I know in the meeting we had that we're for some other things discussed, and pulling the water before, one thing we discussed was maybe pulling the water before we dump it in the hole into storage tanks also above ground. That could be a possibility and things like that, but you're going to come back with some ideas and thoughts? And
I think it's time.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
time to find out what your future really is. I look forward to it.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate what you're doing. Okay. 4.3, Beautification Committee update. Jeanette.
Good evening, Council. My name is Lynette Carruthers. I live at 830 South Skylark Way, and I'm here representing our Beautification Committee this evening. Council, as you well know, Beautification has been working for some time now to put together a Main Street Beautification Plan. Of late, the focus has been on the entry block up on 14th. We would like to make that a prototype block that eventually would extend on down the street. And that prototype block would contain all of the elements that we would be taking on down the street. I would like to review the light that we're proposing, because tonight we are going to be asking that you consider placing lights on the street, and I want to just review the light that has been chosen and the rationale for that light. What you see here is a stresscrete pole that is 21 feet. There is 16 feet above ground and 5 feet below ground. This pole will be delivered to our community as one long pole. Stresscrete is a very specialized concrete aggregate that is basically indestructible. And for our purposes here, lack of maintenance and fading over time is totally a positive. And I think all we have to do is look around us at some of the projects that have been put in, and we have one at the end of the street at CBHA. They put in some of the most expensive light poles on the planet. They are cast iron with a powder-coated surface, and already the powder coating is beginning to oxidize. Moses Lake is a perfect example of, I think, what we do not want to do. Their poles, a newly installed pole, is bright and shiny paint. Within a few years, the pole has begun to oxidize. These stresscrete poles, once they're in place, they'll look the same today as they look 20 years down the road, 50 years, 75 years down the road. They will not fade. They are basically, as I said, indestructible. And the arms on the poles, we're talking 4 feet arms on both sides. The span will be approximately 9 feet. The light on that pole is state-of-the-art LED luminaire. And projects throughout the country, or cities throughout the country, are refitting their existing lighting with the LED lighting that we would be getting with our poles. Something I want us to consider, the last picture I presented of our poles on the street, we were looking at a configuration with the light pole perpendicular to the street. We're rethinking that and would like to orient the light pole parallel with the street. This will give us more light on the sidewalk and will allow us to bump up our banners to a point where they will be out of harm's way for vandalism and for street traffic in the parking lot. So that's a consideration. Would like to request that we purchase 6 lights for the block that talking about between 14th and 13th, and these are the numbers. To purchase 6 pedestrian lights, 16-foot height above sidewalk level, would be $36,500. The numbers you see below that are what the engineer calls soft costs. To get those lights offloaded here in Othello at Public Works, or where Terry deems appropriate for storage, the engineer has put in a $500 cost there. The lights will come loaded on the trucks, but we have to take care of offloading them. And we're talking upwards of 1,400 pounds per light when they get here. So $500 to help defray that cost. We will need to create the purchasing specifications for generating the for the bid process, generating the bid. And that's what you see there. To advertise for, to put the bid out, $500 as well. So the estimated total there for 6 lights on the street, to purchase six lights, $38,000. And would request that we put our bid together and advertise our bid as soon as possible, because as you know, a bid process takes several weeks from the time the bid is put together, that it is advertised, and then you get your responses. So we would like for this to happen in the very near future, so we can also take advantage of the grant for $19,500, the CURB grant that we received for the purchase of lighting only. That CURB grant will take care of 3 of the lights, approximately 3 of the lights, and that would be reimbursable to the city. So upfront, $38,000 to purchase the lights, with the reimbursable possibility of $19,500 when we submit the invoice that the lights have been purchased.
Can we back up? Let's stick with the lights and the rest of the council.
Okay. Larry Julius, our consulting engineer with the city, is here. And Larry, we can ask him any questions you might have about what you have seen here.
Questions. I guess for the council, if we move forward with this, we're sort of making a commitment to do that one block, just so everybody understands that. So the reason we want to buy the 6 lights, the price is a little bit better, correct?
Oh, yes. I didn't say that.
Yes.
What is the difference?
We get a break on the price of lights. The lights as originally, the original cost for the lights was approximately $7,500 a piece. The lights with purchasing 6 will be $6,300.
So then this will cost the city $3,800 until we get the reimbursement, so the council understands.
$30,000.
And the lights would be brought on site, but brought to Othello, and stockpiled until we're ready to install them, either in the spring or through the summer.
Yeah, I think, if we're going to do this project, I think we're going to have to bite the bullet and do something with it. And by what we originally talked about was playing around with 2 lights and try to get that in with the grant money and whatnot. And where are we at? If we bought the 6 lights, we got at least the lights for that particular block, both sides of the street. we can get that in a budget of this year, take care of the grant money, we get reimbursed from that. And then we can look at the installation of these for next year's budget, and we can also give us a chance to maybe play with that a little bit. Say, in other words, just go out and install those lights. It'll cost us X number of dollars. But if we could tie that in with some of our other projects, whether it's a street project or whatever it may be, we can probably cut a lot of that cost. You know, you'll have your move in, move out, and all that. You wouldn't have to do that if you tie it in with another contract. So I think it would be great if we had those stockpiled, ready to go, and then all we've got to do is get them installed. And I think we've got several different ideas on how to get those installed. So I think that's the right way to go.
And another thing that I'd like to point out is that when we were talking about purchasing just the two lights and getting them installed immediately and going through the bid purchase or the bid process and the costs involved in that, we were actually, with this cost of just buying the six poles, which I believe are shorter, and on top of that, being able to purchase more, we're getting a price break. We're actually looking at less than what we were looking at for the other route with two lights.
39, I think.
Yeah. Well, it was 30. It was 39,000, and it was almost exactly half. And I think the half was about 19. So we're looking at less than what we were looking at with the two lights for our portion of it.
I think that the number, Gina, that you were talking about for two lights installation was included in that.
Yeah, it was the whole process. It was the bids and everything, and it actually ended up costing, I think, as much as getting the six lights, which I would much rather see us do, and then be able to get the whole block done.
Motion, we need to decide where the finances are going to come through this. So, Spencer, does everybody have their sheet in front of them? Do you want to go over that, Spencer? What are the possibilities for it?
Yes. I prepared a budget sheet for you. This is a sheet that you get every month in your packets. Clearly this comes up. I'm gonna zoom. This spreadsheet just quickly shows our fund balances for each one of the city funds, where we began the year with, our budget revenues, expenses, to get our ending fund balances that are available for use. I took out the minimum fund balances here and also some projects here that, gosh, can you see that? It's really weird. A couple of projects here. So the skate park and things like that. So that leaves us with a couple of different options here. In our street fund, we have an estimated ending fund balance of about $140,000. That's $140,000. And in our REIT funds, we have about $70,000. I would propose one of these three options for this. Our REIT dollars are restricted dollars. This is an allowable per RCW. This is an allowable expense or use of those funds. Then we also have our street funds. I tend to lean a little more towards the street as an option because those dollars can only benefit the streets. That leaves us with more options with our real estate excise tax dollars.
How you'd like to make a motion, so I can make a motion for you. So the REIT or other street? times they did qualify to purchase the lights would fall under the parameters of the REIT funds. Because that was my first option, was the REIT funds, and using it out of that.
Yeah. And we can do that. Our original outlay would be the $38,000. We'd be reimbursed $19,500 of that. So we'd be left with, what was it, $18,500 expense from that one.
I think that's the way to go. That'll stay out of our street fund and keep that still open to other just projects. And, we'll have to probably put out the $38,000 and we'll get reimbursed for the other. So I want to be sure that's clear that that's what we're looking at here.
Okay, so do I hear a motion to approve the city purchase of 6 pedestrian street lights for the installation on Main Street between 13th and 14th Avenue from the REIT fund?
I'll make that motion.
In the first?
I'll second it.
Okay, seconded. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. Okay, you want to take us to the second item?
Thanks, guys. Okay, continuing here. Now, this piece I am beyond excited about. When we first presented the possibility of planters, we were talking a large brown composite planter to come down the street. Well, fairly recently, we have discovered an outlet, beautification troops here, have discovered an outlet up in up in Quincy. It's a nursery that brings in these amazing, beautiful ceramic plants, and they sell at wholesale cost. So for this quality of pot, they are winter grade pots, which means they can go through season after season, thawing, freezing, rain, snow, and we will still have our gorgeous red pots on the street. Throughout our city, you're seeing desertscapes. McDonald's, the new landscaping, is a desert feel with the grasses and the pillars. The county services building, the new the post office garden up at Aflac, CBHA. This rich, rustic red ceramic pot will blend so beautifully into the landscapes that we're moving toward in our scapes throughout the city. And the pots, you won't have to spend a penny. Our committee will take on the responsibility of soliciting donations for the pots that will go along Main Street. And apparently, if we do this, we do not have to go through the bid process that you as a city would have to go through if you were paying for the pots. That's my understanding. And the pots are reasonable enough that, well, in fact, the two pots you saw out in the foyer, they're mine, and therefore will be donated to the city. So we have two pots to begin with, if we choose to go this route. And the pots you see in the center are staged with how they could look on our main street, with the grasses and the plants flowing out of them. There's also the possibility in this shorter pot, middle shorter pot, of putting a small street tree in that pot. Trees are totally off the table in this community now as far as beautification is concerned. We're not going to put trees and vaults in the sidewalk, and they're just too too much controversy surrounding this, and we choose not to fight that fight. But if there is a possibility of putting a smaller tree in one of these pots, we like that idea. And the other pots are possibilities as you come down the street. And we get closer to city center where there's much more on-street parking. We don't want to interfere with the parking of the businesses with our street pots. So the possibility of moving these red pots into the landscaping of our businesses as we move down the street. Penny is here from Columbia Bank, and Penny has expressed an interest in putting a couple of these pots in her landscape, in beside her sidewalk as you go up to the front door of her bank. And these pots you see on the side, we don't have an example of them, but these could be considered the architectural landscape pots. These big guys in the middle would be out on the streets as you come in on 14th. And between 14th down for at least 3 or 4 blocks, do you ever see people parking along the street? Hardly ever. Maybe they throw up their water pots or Lynette Carruthers to pull weeds or somebody picking up garbage. But for the most part, we don't have a lot of on-street parking for the first several blocks coming into the city. So we're proposing that we get these gorgeous pots out there, and this could be a signature for our community. Oh, you know that Othello down the road? That's a place where they have those beautiful, beautiful red pots. And anyway, a possibility here. And what we need from you is the okay to move forward with the red pots, because if we do these, an order will have to be placed by the end of October to have spring delivery for these red pots in the spring. And this color, red, is the rarest of the pots this nursery and this company that has the pots provide, because there's gold in this red glaze, so they make fewer of these red pots, and so we would need to get our order in, as I say, by the end of October. But I think just an amazing possibility that we have. How red is my face?
Salesman, you do a great job. So, I have a few questions for you.
Okay.
Watering them. So there must be a hole in the middle where you bring a water
yes.
line up.
Yes. And I didn't mention that. We would request that a drip irrigation system be installed when we're doing the infrastructure for the lighting on that block. That a drip irrigation system be installed so our pots could be automatically watered. And as we move down the street, we would replace the old existing wine barrel pots. And something else, guys, sad to say, pink is going to have to go away. Pink does not work with red pots, but red works with red pots, and white, and even purple. So,
red, white, and blue.
Okay, I got a few questions here as you were talking.
Okay,
I started coming to my mind. So, tree roots, wouldn't they bust those pots out?
No.
Seriously?
Not these.
Really?
The tree would die before it would harm the pot, guaranteed. Oh.
Okay.
We're not talking about huge trees. Not at all. Smaller trees.
And then, do you know of any other cities that are using the pots?
No.
Just curious how they worked out for them, that's all. Just, you know. And then the color, with our sun, red has a lot of pigmentation in it. Will that that be able to stand up to our sun, you think?
Absolutely. The pods will be very similar to our light bulb selection. These are glazed ceramic pods. This color will be here forever. No fade factor whatsoever. It's like ceramics found in ancient tombs and they still have color. Bingo. Glazed pots, glazed ceramic. As opposed to a composite pot that eventually will fade and get crusty.
Just out of curiosity, for maintenance sake, with the glazing, did you ask them how it stands up to graffiti? If you can just wipe, if you can wipe it off.
Gina, I haven't talked to anybody about that, but just because it's like the hardest dishes you could possibly have in your house, and if you spray painted your china or one of your dishes. You could get a solvent and just wipe it off. You could use a solvent on these. It won't affect or hurt a thing.
They're beautiful. I'll say that much. I really like them.
And I did talk to the man back here, Terry, because one of the reasons we'd chosen the composite pot was ease of handling for our public works guys. And I said, Terry, these are the new thing we want. What do you think? Can we handle these? And with a forklift or a bucket or three guys, like we moved them from, I say we had a crew, moved them from the senior center to here this afternoon. And I saw three guys, they basically lift them from with the lift and move them onto the dolly. And then we wheeled them in, and then they offloaded from the dolly. Three guys were able to lift them off. So they're heavy enough that they're not going to walk away. Once they're filled with dirt and possibly a few rocks in the bottom, they'll stay right where we put them.
Now, I'm sorry, I got so many questions, but
go ahead.
I'm just trying to think what could happen here. How is the year going to tip over?
The architectural pots, we will not put the ones on either side will not go on the street. Those will be like for Penny's application, or I would love to put one in front of the post office and possibly down at McDonald's or the little area in front of County Services Building with the flag. These guys, I would not put on the street. These other two, hey, when you leave tonight, just push on either one of them and see how heavy they are. And once they're filled with what we're going to be filling them with, they're not going anywhere.
Good. Any other questions? So do I hear a motion to approve the beautification committee's recommendation for using Washington Pottery's rustic red planting pots in the Main Street Beautification Project, prototype block 13th to 14th Avenue. Can you make that motion?
Second.
Okay, Mark Snyder first, Gene second. Any further questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. You're batting 1,000.
Oh, exciting.
Looks like somebody else in your committee wanted to visit too. David, you want to come up?
The cost of these pots are reasonable, and I believe we will see people step forward and say, "I'll buy a pot." I've already submitted myself to two of them. So.
Oh my gosh! I didn't know that. Yeah.
Well, you're making her night.
So we'll go for it.
We're good. Yeah. We're excited about what the beautification committee is doing. And
Molly,
bless.
Molly did this for me. She took pictures of the pots that were up at the center. I know it's kind of hard to see with the lighting and so forth, but you can see a couple pots as we start down the street that have a tree. And anyway, that's what the lights will look like, and we'll get banners up there, and that gives you an idea of what the difference that the scape will be as we move down the street. Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, everybody, for all your work. I know it's been a long run for everybody, so but you're starting to move now. So thank you. Okay. Final plat approval for Ashwood Notch, Phase 2. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Daryl Piercy, city planner. Before you for consideration is the final plat for Ashwood Notch, Phase 2. And I just want to point out a clarification from your consent agenda to your action item that we're talking about at the moment. On your consent agenda, you approved the infrastructure improvements that were a part of Phase 2 for Ashwood Notch, the roadway, the sidewalks, the sewer and water installations. So that action, that consent item allowed you to approve those elements of the project. With that done, all other requirements of the project for Phase 2 have been met. All of the conditions of the preliminary plat approval have been completed by the applicant, Olson Homes, and so therefore we're ready to move forward to the actual final plat for Phase 2. So with your approval, we will move forward and allow that project to continue in its final form, and houses will be developed and sold on that site. And you might, if you've been up in that area, you'll notice that under our code, we're allowed to issue building permits prior to final plat approval, and there's several homes within this division that have already been started and are nearing completion, and I suspect with the approval of the final plat, they will soon be closed and finalized for new owners. So we're recommending that the final plat be approved and seeking your consideration of that action. Be happy to respond to any questions.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that, because I was kind of in a limbo there a little bit when I seen both of those, one on the consent and one on our regular agenda there. But thank you. I thought that's what it was, but you took care of that and clarified it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I might point out that one of the things that we've been waiting for is you've heard some discussion in the community. There was one final element of the final plat process that needed to be completed, and that was the warranty bond for all of the improvements that are in place. Our code requires that the applicant put forward a warranty bond to ensure that the craftsmanship of the installation of those materials was adequate and will be maintained over a period of 2 years. We received today an irrevocable letter of credit regarding that project, and it meets our requirements for the city, so we would recommend you move forward.
Do I hear a motion to approve the final plat for Ashwood Notch and authorize the city engineer and city planner on behalf of the city administrator to sign the final Mylar?
I'll make that motion.
Ken Johnson first. Dan second. Any further questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. And that passes. Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you.
We appreciate what you're doing. Okay, approval of city administrator contract. let me get that up here real quick. Oh, there it is. Okay, did everybody get a chance to review that a little bit and look at it? Okay. I'm going to start a little bit, and then I'm going to ask Spencer to jump in and go over a few things on it. The duties of the city agrees to employ Wallace W. Ferris as the city administrator of the city of Othello to perform all duties as specified by the city ordinance and additional duties as assigned or created by city resolutions and or at the direction of the mayor of Othello. Employee warrants that the performance of such duties will be done with the highest degree of skill and judgment in accordance with accepted standards. You want to go ahead from there, Spencer, and go over the contract a little bit?
Yes, I'm just going to go over some of the highlights here. The salary is set at $115,000 per year. There is a severance package granted upon termination, and that's 3 months worth of 3 months worth of pay, unless he is terminated for bringing drugs into the workplace or legal actions, convicted of violation of federal, state, or state laws. Performance reviews, he's going to have a 6-month probationary period. At that time, he'll have a review done by the mayor, and then his reviews are going to continue to be done by the mayor every year after that. Benefits, his benefits are going to be the same as any other city employee, or he'll be entitled to the same benefit packages. For purpose of the application, once he starts, we're going to consider that he's been an employee of the city for 10 years. And so for accruing sick and vacation, we're going to up those levels. Sick leave is still going to be accrued at 8 hours. His vacation leaves, instead of accruing 10 days a year, he's going to start off accruing 15 days a year vacation. Under the benefits section also, he's going to start off with 40 sick hours and 40 vacation hours, just as a base. Typically, an employee starts with zero. Professional development, he'll be entitled to the same travel and meeting reimbursements that other employees are. The cost for his trainings and seminars that he attends will be built into the budget, as we do for all other departments. And lastly, there's a relocation allowance of $7,500, up to $7,500. And the condition upon is granted $7,500 for relocation and temporary housing expenses, condition upon the employee residing within the boundaries of the Othello School District. So I think those are a couple of the big points there.
Questions from council? Everybody comfortable with that? This will be a contract. He will be here fourth. I think somewhere right in there. So he'll be around for a couple of days. So do I hear a motion to authorize the mayor to enter in an employment contract with Wade Ferris?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
You have first, Gina seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, second. Thank you very much. I'm trying to be a mayor and city administrator is a lot of work. So I appreciate you supporting that. Okay, 4.6, 2014 budget committee presentation. Discussion, I should say. Get that up here real quick. What we're going to do is we're going to try to start a little bit earlier this year. Does everybody have that picture up so you can look at that? It's also up there if you want to look at it. And my goal will be to be at all the meetings this year. I've already visited with my boss, and he said he's going to allow me to be to him, so that's good. Contracts, right now we have Ken Johnson, Ken Kaler, and Gina. They're scheduled for September 25th at 12. Is that going to work for anybody? So if you're wanting to switch, say something as we're going through, and we'll try to make it happen if we can. So. Okay, general government is Ken Johnson, Ken Kaler, and Charles Garcia. That's the 27th of September at 12 o'clock. Any problem there? Everybody still on board there? Okay. Street Fund is Ken Kaler, Mark Snyder, and Gina. That's at 12 p.m. on the 2nd. What?
We've been doing that street fund all year. You want on or do you want to stay off? Going back on it. I've been going to street things. I'd like to do that if that's.
Yeah, that's fine. If you want.
Okay, so should I park Snyder and put Dan in there? We'll give you a revised edition of this, so. Okay. Sewer and water. Gina, Dan Deaver, and Ken Kaler, 10-3 at 12 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay. Solid waste. Gene is not here, but we have it evening. Okay. Mark Snyder and Ken Kaler at 6 p.m. on 10-3. That works. Okay. Special revenue debt service.
Ken Johnson, Gina Darrow, Mark Snyder at noon on the 8th of October. Looks good. Okay. Park and Rec is Charles Garcia, Eugene Bain, and Gina Darrow on 10 October 9th at 6. Everybody
out? Oh, Eugene has to be here at it.
Yeah, Gene.
I'll make it work.
Eugene's making it easy.
I'll see if I can get Chris to take them to ballet.
Okay, law enforcement is Ken Johnson, Mark Snyder, Dan Deaver, October 10th at 12. Any issues there? Okay, code enforcement, Mark Snyder, Eugene Bain, that's October 10th also, but at 6 p.m. Does anybody else like to join on that one? Be involved in that? Dan, you want to be in that one?
Guys, okay, you can put that out.
Okay, put Dan then on that one. That's it. Thank you.
As long as he does the last two, doesn't it?
Shouldn't. So, okay. Anything else we need to know, Spencer? That was everything, wasn't it?
That's it.
That's it? Well, good. That was easier than I thought. That's neat. Okay. Let's move on to, where are we at? TIB grant application. Request matching funding. Larry, you up for that one?
Carrie,
okay.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Tonight we've brought before you the TIB, which stands for Transportation Improvement Board grant. We've worked with GNR Engineering Services here to run through some projects and some streets that need some improvement, and the TIB has several sections to their grants, and some of those sections they come through as preservation maintenance, which is your overlays, your sidewalk, and then you've got your reconstruction projects. We put in for three of those this year. The grant had to go in by Friday the 23rd of August to get this thing in on time. So tonight we're bringing it in front of you here to explain a little bit of what we've got going on. We'll start with the Scooting Street improvements here. This is a sidewalk portion of TIB. It covers the north side of Scootney Street. It attaches the sidewalk from 7th to 1st. That has a 20% minimum match. The match on that is $43,820. The total project cost of that is $219,100. The second one that we have here is South First Street improvements. This is a overlay street preservation project here, and it runs from Main Street to East Spruce, and it covers your asphalt air grind overlay. That has a 10% matching fund. The total project cost for that is $455,300. The match for that is $45,530. Our next section there is 14th Avenue reconstruction from Cemetery Road to SR 26. The match on that is 20%. The total project cost is $2,450,000. And it's a complete reconstruction. And the match on that's $490,000. The total matching funds tonight that we're asking council to approve is $579,350. Now, the matching funds that we're asking council to approve tonight can be recovered from the abutting property owners off of 14th Avenue. So at this time, staff's asking council to approve the matching funds for the TIB grant.
Everybody understand that? We're talking about the school district has money set aside. We have the building projects going on down there with money set aside, all to support this project.
Just the 14th Avenue project.
Correct, 14th Avenue we're talking about. So that when you hear the millions of dollars, of course, what we put in goes up quite a bit. But that money there will take care of the matching end of that part of it. Am I right on that one?
Correct.
Right, Larry?
And the request to, I
you're just requesting that we haven't got this grant, but if we do get the grant, then we're going to need the funds, and the request is for the money. It's not necessarily giving it to you right now, but it's
correct.
If we do get the grant, then
yes, the matching funds don't have to pay back until you actually ask for the grant and it's been approved, and you start using the funds, and you got to pay.
Probably it wouldn't even come in until 2014, then, possibly. It's basically what it would be, yeah.
Right. We should get notification, if I remember right, from Larry. November should be notification if we awarded any of these grants.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to work with that when the school's out.
So, does that include the property then from the school district to the highway that's on the east side of the road that belongs to Hamptons? Are they not required to put their share of that?
Isn't there a latecomer's fee with them, I believe, on that one? They'll have a latecomer.
I think it would just be if the property was sold. Is that correct?
See, that property still belongs in the county, so we can't assess that. The street belongs to the city, but that property belongs to the county, so it would have to be on anything in the latecomer's.
Larry's going to address that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions like this usually involve the council, staff, the property owners getting together and talking about how best to approach it. We decided that to show for the funding agency that the city had to match up front, we actually garner us more points by showing the 20% of the match.
And if we could actually get this grant, it is saving the property owners a lot of money from the original amounts that they were looking at, too.
And the latecomer are allowed by state laws and quite common for municipalities, even private developers, to get some of their money back.
Any other questions? Okay. So I hear a motion to approve matching funds if the city is awarded the TIB grant for street improvements.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Okay. Okay. First and seconded. Any further questions? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The same? Okay, good. That passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jessica, we need 14th and first done, so. Okay, any unfinished business? Okay, any new business?
Ken,
go first. Nothing telling me.
Yeah, we had a meeting last week with the prosecutor's office and the police chief for the contract review for prosecutor's services, and they're just going to use the basic agreement of 3% increase is what was stated in the contract for budget purposes for next year. And also jail services also would be a 3% increase.
Any other new business before we go to Catherine?
Thank you. This is a don't shoot the messenger topic. But I wanted to get the council thinking about what it would like to consider as its approach to both the medical and the recreational marijuana, because we have some timelines that are looming in the very near future that will greatly impact. finalizing those rules, and they anticipate that those rules will be finalized now. They just extended their timeline, but now they will be finalized on September 4th. Then they will be accepting applications for licenses beginning November 16th. That's significant because once they start accepting licenses for each of the three uses, there will be a 30-day window within which people can submit their applications, and the state will then begin issuing licenses at the expiration of those 30 days. So mid-December, we can anticipate that the licenses will begin to be issued by the state. What does that mean for Othello? Unfortunately, one of the large unknowns currently is how many of the retail uses will be allotted to each county. There is no limit under the state law as to how many processors and how many growers can locate in any given county or city. There are, however, limitations in the law about how many retail outlets there can be. But the formula is an unknown formula that the State Liquor Control Board is working with Office of Financial Management on, based upon population. So we won't know how many of the retail licenses will be issued to Adams County until, I'm assuming, when the state publishes the final rules. Now, with the medical marijuana, you'll recall we discussed some options that the council had to address the issue. And we were hoping with the moratoriums that there would be some answers to some of those unanswered questions within the last year. There are no answers. Kent is one of the cities that adopted an outright ban prohibiting all medical marijuana collective gardens in their jurisdiction. They were challenged. That case is pending currently in the Court of Appeals, and we won't know if that decision will precede any of the licenses for recreational marijuana. Although you have to understand the medical marijuana issue currently is separate from the recreational marijuana. But there are some definite significant interconnections. And then Seattle has a challenge currently to their business license ordinance. They chose to regulate marijuana uses in their jurisdiction, but they require that you apply for a business license. And the plaintiffs in that case have challenged the requirement of business license on the basis that in the application you have to announce what your business is. And because that is a statement that you have to sign and verify as to the truth, you are basically telegraphing to the federal government, I'm committing a violation of federal law, because it's still illegal in the federal law. So that case is currently before the courts, but we don't have a decision yet. So more unanswered questions, yay for us. I wish I had better answers. The biggest issue that I see facing all of the jurisdictions right now, in addition to all these and unanswered questions, is the tension between the recreational and the medicinal marijuana. Because the proposed rules for recreational marijuana, they tax at 75%, and they're highly regulated. The medical marijuana is not taxed and not regulated. So call me a psychic, but I'm trying to forecast where the market is going to turn for the best value for the product. And I see that it's probably going to lean more towards the medical marijuana as opposed to the recreational marijuana. So that, to me, heightens the importance of when and how my clients address both of the issues. But in particular, I think we need to be looking at doing something permanent with medical marijuana. We can't continue to readopt the moratoriums. That's not going to be a viable option. So basically, your options at this point are to pick which of the laws you feel most comfortable violating. That's really what it boils down to, because you can choose to ban it, either one of them, in which case you're violating state law, because clearly both are allowed under state law presently, or you can allow it and violate federal law.
Now, under the recreational law, nobody could just go out in their backyard and just grow it for their personal consumption.
Under I-502, nobody can engage in any of those activities, growing, processing, or selling, unless they are licensed by the state. Now, that's an interesting process, by the way, because the state liquor control board is not doing any CEPA analysis of its draft rules. So we don't know what the potential impacts of those rules will be, and we won't have a chance to comment on that. The way the process works presently is they will receive the applications. If they are going to issue a license, they will notify the jurisdiction that they received the application, intend to issue the license, and we have 20 days within which we can file a written objection. Now, our written objection has to show some basis for challenging the decision to issue a license. So we've got to be prepared in advance, of what our potential objections would be. One of the first things I think every jurisdiction needs to do before they can begin to really analyze how it impacts their jurisdiction is to take a look within your city at what areas are available currently for these uses to look at. Because remember, both the medical and the recreational marijuana uses are banned within 1,000 feet of certain sensitive uses such as schools, daycares, public parks and playgrounds, those sorts of things. So I think we need to have Daryl take a look and map the city for us and narrow down what areas we're actually dealing with. I know in talking to him earlier this evening, he's taken a cursory look at that, and there are some places in Othello that are open for that development. Unfortunately, none of my clients are Scott-free, not even George. So you're going to have to be thinking how you want to address both of the issues, and your options are to do nothing, which from a legal standpoint is probably the most defensible, but not the most practical. You can adopt a ban and face a potential challenge of violating state law, or you can allow it and regulate it and face some possible challenges under federal law. None of them particularly wonderful options. But it really is a comfort level for the council, and I don't obviously expect any sort of decision or direction tonight, but I wanted to get you thinking about it because we need to start preparing, and that's going to take some time if we're talking about draft ordinances and going through a secret process and public hearings and that sort of thing. We're going to need a little bit of time. And my recommendation is that you have something on the books by the first of the year.
And that's basically for the person that has his little medical card and could grow it in his backyard for his
the medical marijuana has two components. There's the individual patient, and then there's the collective gardens. The individual patient, there is very little that a local jurisdiction can do to regulate that because the medical marijuana laws allow somebody who is a qualified patient to grow up to 15 plants in their residence, in their private residence. That's in the law. So we can't really ban it from residential zones if it's just for personal use. What you could do in a zoning ordinance is regulate certain impacts of that potential use. For instance, that it not be visible from a public right-of-way, or that it not use butane in the processing, which would be a fire hazard, or that it be sprinkled appropriately if they are using something that creates a larger risk. But there is nothing we